Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to our show. My name is Deborah Rose, and I'm your host on Circle Talk. Circle Talk is one of the shows featured on CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. CSNP has a lineup of rotating shows throughout the month. Mondays feature Lunatic Mondays with host Laura Gonzalez. He alternates weeks in English and Spanish. It can't be Tuesday without Circle Talk, and I continue to be the host for this fun discussion show on the first and third Tuesday of each month. Wednesdays feature nature spirituality with none other than Selena Fox. The third Friday of each month features Blue Marble, an eco-educational, eco-activism, and eco-spirituality podcast. We have such a fun and informative lineup of shows, and we here at CS try them all. Celebrate the November full moon online with Circle Sanctuary Community. The theme for November is sacred animals and takes place on Tuesday, November 8th. Full moon circles begin at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Mountain, 4 p.m. Pacific, or 1 a.m. the next day UTC. Our full moon circles include invocations, music, meditation, poetry reflection, and ritual workings. They are facilitated by Selena Fox and other members of the Circle Sanctuary community. If you join us online, you're invited to bring a candle to kindle during the ritual, and you're invited to interact with others on chat on YouTube. Attendance is free and no registration is required. For more information, please go to our website at www.circlesanctuary.org. Would you like to discover a life-changing spiritual paradigm that honors the divine self and just strives to elevate it to a higher state of being? Well, you're in luck. Tonight on Circle Talk, we'll be looking inward and in the shadows to find our personal evolution. Our guest is Frater Tenebris, and he's going to be discussing his new book, The Philosophy of Dark Paganism, Wisdom and Magic to Cultivate the Self. I've read it, and so it's really good, and I'm very excited to talk with him. We're going to be discussing the 9 dark pagan principles, dark pagan traditions, gods and spirits, cosmic levels of existence, and more. He's going to be introducing us to a spiritual path that focuses on self-transformation and shadow work. Frater Tenebris is a public speaker, blogger, personal philosopher, and practitioner of dark paganism. He's a member of the Covenant of UU, Unitarian Universalist Pagans, or CUPS, and the Sabosky Grand Shrine of America, which is a Shinto temple. He lives in a quiet neighborhood in a Texas suburb with his wife and 2 dogs. For more information, please go to his blog at darkfrater.blogspot.com. Welcome, Frater, to Circle Talk.
Great to be here, Deborah.
I am so excited to talk with you after reading your book. It's funny, and I will share with you, I shared with the publishers when I talked with Llewellyn. At first, the title scared me, and then, which is one reason that I wanted to bring you on to dispel that and really explain what dark paganism is. And when I got the book, it's really rich. It's not a fluffy read. I will very, very insightful and really made me think. So I'm very excited you're on the show.
Oh, that's very kind. That's very sweet. I appreciate it. I'm very happy to be here.
So tell us how you got started. Did you grow up pagan as a child, or how did you even assign anything about paganism, and when did it start for you?
Oh, my. I certainly didn't grow up pagan as a child. my parents were very strong fundamentalist Christians. And it was, I grew up everything opposite of what I am now. I went to a private Christian fundamentalist school. I was taught creationism and the evils of Satanism, and it was and the occult, and man, it was a completely opposite of where I am. And I think early on, there was some teenage rebellion in that, you know. So, you know, hey, they say I shouldn't do that, but I'm going to anyway, just to be, you'd be a teenager, right? One of the biggest things that really got, ultimately got me on the path was in my high school, so this, you know, here in the buckle of the Bible Belt, there was a book by Isaac Bonawitz, his first book, Real Magic. I think they thought it was a stage magic book, honestly. well, anybody that's familiar with, you know, the wizard and one of the man that helped coin the term neo-paganism, one of the elders, well, no, it was not, definitely not stage magic. It was a good, solid intro to witchcraft, paganism.
In this path, yeah.
Yeah, and I think you could probably see, I like to think, you could see his spirit through my book. He really set me on the path, ultimately, of where I am today. Now, I of course, as a teenager, and of course, you know, you deal with the spooky stuff. That's wildly what attracts, you know, especially, you know, young people. And then I moved away from it for a while, and then I just started getting a call back to it. And I found several books that on dark paganism, one that especially formed my views, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. And ultimately, that's how I got to where I am today.
Well, and we're very excited you're here. Now, this is not your first book.
Actually, it is.
It is? Oh, I thought you had written another book. Maybe I read that wrong. So I might have read it. I might have read the art. This is your first book. Well, this is a great book to be your first book. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm excited
to see what else comes from you. So, you know, it's funny. Again, the title didn't scare me, but it gave me pause. So when I read it, I was very, very excited. So tell our listeners up front, get us all excited, what is dark paganism?
Okay.
It sounds spooky, but it's not. It's a very positive path.
Yes, it does sound spooky. You're right. And it does. And in fact, when I first learned about it, I thought, I don't know about this. But as I define it, dark paganism is a positive, life-affirming pagan spirituality that's focused on honoring and cultivating the self. Basically, I build on the works of a individual, John J. Coughlin, who wrote the book Out of the Shadows. And in it, he proposes the existence of two approaches to spirituality. Both approaches address existential questions of meaning and ethics, but they look at them differently. One approach is external, in that it looks outside the person for answers. In this approach, the external approach, the primary question is, what's the meaning of the universe?
Right.
And by discovering the cosmic meaning, the individual can find it. Other approach is internal, and it looks inside the individual for answers. In that approach, the primary question is, who am I, and how do I fit within everything? Meaning isn't something handed to the person, but it's something the individual creates. So the external is sometimes referred to as the light side, or the light path. The internal is the dark path. Think about the famous cave metaphor. Outside it's light and sunshine, inside it's dark. So the inside or dark path, dark paganism, that's where the dark comes from, is a metaphor for self-knowledge, self-acceptance, avoiding the two extremes, errors of selfishness and self-denial.
Mm-hmm.
It's about autonomy, healthy relations, self-acceptance, self-cultivation. Those are all part of the elements of dark paganism.
And I find that, like I said, and you do a really good job in the book, again, dark paganism, dark, and I think in Western culture, we sometimes have a negative reaction to that word, and necessarily think it's spooky or it's bad, and that is not true. You need dark as much as light, and you do a really good job of talking about that in your book. Talk a little bit about that, about the word.
Oh, absolutely. You know, dark, you know, it goes all the way back. We find it all the way back in ancient Greece. And a lot of MB prehistory is probably where it originates. Because if you think about, you know, humanity before, you know, at night, that's when predators, you couldn't see them, but they could see you. Objects in your path, it was dangerous to walk at night. So the night became associated, the darkness of the night became associated with danger. But in the light, you could see the predators before they saw you, and you could see where you were going, so it was safer. So the daylight became associated with safety, and that kind of set this primeval, this basic good.
Mm-hmm.
And then that continued on through the ages. The ancient Greeks, Hades sat on a black ebony throne. Like for a moment there. Of course, in the underworld, which underground is dark, and that's scary.
Mm-hmm.
So that represents death. And ancient Greeks, early Greeks, had a very negative view of the afterlife. Most of the Mediterranean world, most of the Near Eastern world, death was just a shady place where everybody, good and bad, went to for a shady non-existence. And only later did they start getting the idea of a good, of a happy afterlife and a bad afterlife. But see, this type of dark as negative stayed on. The government, they tend to like black. Again, it's scary. It shows power. All this kind of, and with our metaphors, the dark night of the soul,
right,
emerging from darkness is, you know, is synonymous with depression, sadness,
right.
Star Wars, come back to the dark side. The dark side is evil. All those symbols are very much inbred with us, but dark also has a positive side. Dark is representative of, well, one, our mortality. That's again scary, but also that's a positive. It's a representative of power, good and bad. It can represent, here in Texas, our soil is rich and black, and black soil is fertile soil.
Right.
We spend 9 months in darkness before birth. So it's where birth and growth takes place. So black and darkness is not necessarily bad. It has a positive side to it also. And that's kind
of
where
we
go.
You did a really good job of saying we need the dark as much as we need the light.
Sure. You bet. We do. There's a tendency in Western culture, especially right now, modern Western culture, there's a tendency for us to be, you got to smile, you know, smile,
right,
though your face is, you know, the world is hurting, you know, what the song by, the little song went back in the 20s. And we have to smile. We're positive to the point that we now have what some have termed toxic positivity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter how horrible things are going, you got to smile and smile through it.
Right. Yeah. Or right. We call that
you
also denial. But anyway, yeah.
It is denial. It is denial.
Yeah.
And the reality is you can smile through it, but that's when the darkness starts to eat its way into you. And then you have issues sometimes can arise.
Yes.
Sometimes a Freudian slip, for example, and worse yet when people crush that darkness in.
Right.
So,
you need to look in the corners, and know yourself, become a whole person. Just all light in is just as would be just as dysfunctional as being all dark.
Absolutely, absolutely right. You know, John Coughlin uses the image of the Taoist symbol, the yin yang,
mm-hmm.
which is half white on one side, half black on the other. However, we need to remember each side has the opposite color, a dot in it.
Right.
So the black has a white dot in it, and the white has a black dot in it. Because, like you just said, we need both.
Right. We are both, to be honest. We are both.
Absolutely.
So, absolutely. And again, I tell the listeners a really value to your book is I tend to be more Pollyanna than, say, my partner, who will I say is negative, and he'll say he's realistic. So the good thing about this book for me is that not only is your book very well written, at the end of each chapter you have a journal, you have questions about that chapter that really makes you think. So, and it, you know, it makes you think of how you can incorporate into your life, which I found very, very helpful, Prater.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. People learn by different means. Some by simply mm-hmm. reading material, but others, they need to get involved. And it allows those individuals that have other ways of learning to get involved with it as well.
So, and early on, which is a lot of the core of the book, is tell us about, and I love how you talk about the magic of the number 9. I want you to touch on that too. But tell us about the 9 principles of dark magic, which really helped me understand it.
Oh, okay.
How you came up with that.
As I was putting together, trying to work my thoughts around all this,
mm-hmm.
I was trying to understand better really how we could understand ourselves. And
mm-hmm.
I came across the work of a psychologist by the name of Carol Rice. I think I'm saying her name right, to be honest
mm-hmm.
with you. I've never heard it pronounced. It's R-Y-F-F. And I hope if she hears me, I hope she forgives me for not if I don't say it right.
Mm-hmm.
But she focused on what are the characteristics of well-being? Positive psychology focuses less on individuals who have struggles or issues
mm-hmm.
that they're working through, but what are the characteristics of somebody who is living well?
Right,
in
fulfilled
a good
life.
Place.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What are their characteristics so that we can strive to be close to that, a goal to work towards? And she identified what she felt to be 6 factors for someone who had a sense of well-being: personal growth, autonomy, environmental mastery, satisfying relationships, purpose in life. When I
mm-hmm.
read her work and it was like, this is the key for what I wanted to say in this book. I felt like what she had found was a useful tool. Now, this is not just a reworking of her work. It forms a source. And besides, this is a pagan philosophy. This is a spiritual philosophy.
Right.
So I modified it and added three others: knowledge, magic, and what's called corporal spirituality. So all together, it comes up to 9 philosophical principles: self-knowledge, self-acceptance, autonomy, magic, corporal spirituality, environmental mastery, purpose in life, satisfying relationships, and what I call magnum opus, or the great work. Those 9 principles, which I expand on in the book, I, as a useful tool to help the individual work towards a greater state of well-being.
Yeah, and you go into, and it's funny because, like I said, it made me think. Like, I've got notes here. When I read a book, I write notes. You talk about the 5 characteristics of self, and you explain, it took me by surprise. You said one is the self is divine, and you are a god. I really like that, and I had not thought of that concept before.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you know, that I was concerned that some people would go, oh, well, this is, you know, egotism. Okay.
You go in to explain it, and it basically is that, you know, there are levels, and we're not real high up there. But you know, things about being human is why you say that.
Exactly. You know, the Gnostics described us as a divine spark. One of the great ancient Greek philosophers actually said that, quote, we are the soul, but we are soul, is a god, and that it owes little to the passing of the, quote, noble brethren in the heavens. But then again, another philosopher, Iamblichus, said, yeah, we're a god, but we're the least of the gods. Don't get big-headed here with this godhood stuff. It can quickly become a delusion.
Absolutely.
Right. But that also gives us something to grow. Because
part
of later on, the magnum opus, the great work, is transformation, growth. The story of the goddess Inanna is all about growth. She starts
Tell
out a young
that.
Maiden. She's helpless. She finds this tree, hulupu tree, which nobody knows what that was supposed to be, but what's called a hulupu tree. She takes care of it. She's going to harvest it. And then, though, all these divine beings have taken it over, and she's helpless. And the demigod Gilgamesh comes and shoos them away and chops down the tree for her. She goes from that helpless state to, at the end, being the queen of heaven and earth. But she fights for it and works for it all the way up. It's not handed to her. Even the gods push back against her. We can use that as a metaphor for our own advancement, both in this world and in the next.
Yeah, and you do a really good job, too, in the book, and I think it's in that chapter, that pagan philosophy is wonderful, but there is wisdom traditions in many cultures, in many ancient things. And someone who who likes ancient cultures and Egyptians, and you talk about that, that you find wisdom in many cultures.
Thank you. Thank you. There is great wisdom in many cultures. Our little slice of Western culture is a brief blip in the grand story of humanity that goes back thousands and thousands of years.
Explain to me the principle that I had not heard of. Is it corpo spirituality?
Yeah, corpo spirituality.
Explain that for me.
Okay. Corpo spirituality views the embraces the physical body's goodness, and that the material world itself is sacred and spiritual. It's very similar to pantheism and animism, but not exactly. A lot of those emphasize that there is divinity within the material world. And true, I do believe there is, but that the material world in and of itself is sacred. The physical body in and of itself is divine and sacred. That's kind of the subtle difference between corporal spirituality.
It's a way of thinking of it, yes.
Right, right. It's not just that it's infused with spirit, which, like I said, it is. But as I say later on in the book, it could be fused as the material world can be looked at as frozen spirit. It's actually in and of itself sacred, which lends back to the echo-centered principles that Circle Sanctuary is founded upon. And, honoring nature in and of itself, not just the spirit within nature that does exist, but nature itself, which is a sacred thing.
You also, a chapter that many of our listeners will be drawn to, you talk about principle four, magic.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. I appreciate it. Magic is a core element of
our faith.
Indeed. I think it's pretty universal across the board in paganism, because it gets back to the divinity of who we are as divine beings. Plus, it recognizes what we just talked about, that sacred nature is conscious. It is spirit. So it is a relationship between us and nature and the cosmos. I mentioned that kind of seems to be the trend within a lot of magic users, that there's magic is more of probability enhancement or probability control. And that's because chaos is an embedded feature in the material world. It's potential though. And there's always possibilities, some or more than others. I saw once, I think it was Feder Bonowitz, who said that magic does not make the impossible happen. It makes the improbable probable.
Right.
So, for example, you do a financial spell. Chances are there's a good possibility some things are pretty likely to happen. What are the odds that you're going to find a random coin lying on the ground? Here in the States, it will probably be a penny. You'll find a penny anywhere, maybe a quarter if you're real lucky. But what are the odds that you're going to find a roll of $100 U.S. dollars, U.S. bills? Not likely. Not impossible. Personal account. My father, about a year ago, was at a store, and he looked down, and lo and behold, there was a wallet laying on the ground, loaded with money and credit cards. Now, he's an ethical person. He went to the store manager and said, here you go. You know, I found this. Okay. And they said, hey, yeah, some guy just called up here asking for this. So he did the ethical thing. That's in his nature. Mm-hmm. But still, what are the odds? It's not impossible that you'll find money on the ground. So magic increases the probability of an occurrence. So you combine that with real world effort, because, you know, the Aesop, the pagan fabulist, said that the gods help those who help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, normally people say, well, that's in the Bible somewhere. No, it's not. Aesop said that. So
absolutely,
magic supplements, it increases the probability that we can change real world events. And in the course of doing so, this is something I've learned through my practice, it changes me personally more than it actually changes the real world, my magical practice. There's a feedback loop to magic, and you will be changed probably as much or more than any real world changes that you'll find from having a magical practice.
Don't you think one of those changes is you're simply, when I do workings, I'm open to the possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're open to possibilities, then you see everything in a different light.
That's a good point. That's a really good point that I hadn't considered. You're right.
I mean, especially if you have been doing this for a while, you know, the whole thing is you don't, you know, ask for a shiny red truck. You're not specific. You ask for transportation. You ask for a way to get things. And when I do that, all of a sudden I know it's coming. And so I'm open. And I think in life that sometimes I've probably had a lot of doors open for me, but I wasn't looking that way and I didn't realize it. So I think in your book helped me think about that doing magic makes you open to the possibilities of how whatever form it comes in.
That's excellent. I sense a blog post coming. That's a good one.
And you talk about two different types of magic. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, okay. So there are historically two types of magic. There's what's called thergy and thaumaturgy. Thergy is God working, so to speak.
Right.
It is explicitly religious, one might say.
Right.
It's working with the divine. It's putting a lot of faith in the divine. If you have a personal deity, working with that personal deity.
Right.
It's really God-centered or deity-centered. I like that term better.
Right.
A lot of mainstream religious practices are simply thergy. They even use the word thergical. It's still common in a lot of mainstream religions. Whereas thaumaturgy is sometimes referred to as wonder-working.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more you-focused. It is your divine ability based on your divine self interacting with a conscious, multi-layered, interconnected cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean you don't work with deities. If you're a good thaumaturgist, you work with everything. Okay, you throw everything in the kitchen sink to make something happen. By that, you work with correspondences, the right day of the week, you know, where are the stars, where are the planets. You work with the right herbs, invoke the right deities, you know, move your arms the right way, hold your tongue the right way.
Right. It's layers. And I've always told it when I teach classes is, listen, if there's an emergency and I need a parking space, you know what I mean? There's something I can do. But magic, like life, is layers. And the more research, the more effort you put into it, I think you're more likely to have results.
Oh, I think you are too. And I think things start to happen. Well, one,
mm-hmm.
you pointed out, you start to become aware of things.
Right. You look
you
at things
differently. You start noticing unusual
right.
things.
Right.
right. And then things just kind of seem to start, you get these, what I call these moments that make you go, which is, you know, wow, that was an interesting, quote, coincidence.
Right. Right. What did that
and
mean?
And that starts, yeah, that starts getting more and more. You
right.
know, and you know that's interesting. And so, the more you work with it, the more the probabilities start to coalesce. So it builds on itself, and you know, remember that series on cable called The Magicians, and one of the initial themes is that magic was addictive. And in some sense, it gets that way. You start, the more you do magic, the more you want to do magic. It does start to build. And then, like you said, you start to notice things. And that reinforces it. So now you want to get back and do more. And so in many ways, because it's changing you. It's changing the self. The self is starting to change in a good way. Hopefully in a good way. And that gets back to intent. That can affect whether it's a positive life affirming change or whether your change is a negative change.
Right. You know, in this chapter, and we talked about magic made me and you do a really good job at the beginning, and you talk about many paths, but the dark paganism does not belong to any certain path. It doesn't belong to the Druids or the Alexandrians or the Gardnerians. It's almost like a philosophy that you could use no matter what your spiritual tradition, if you have one, or even if you're eclectic.
Oh, absolutely right. And like you point out, I do mention that in the book, that it's not a religion. It's not a tradition in and of itself. It is a philosophy, and it can be, it can fit any of the traditions. In fact, some traditions were more along those lines than they are today, because traditions evolve. Nothing stays the same. So, yes, indeed, dark paganism is a worldview. It's a philosophy that whether you're Wiccan and whatever type of Wiccan you might be, you know, like you said, Gardnerian, Alexandrian, fairy tradition. Fairy
right.
tradition works very well with dark paganism.
Right. I mean, and like I said, there was a lot of concepts in this book that I thought, you know, I need to explore and bring this into my own personal practice. So, yeah, I think you can use it for any tradition that you would.
I agree.
So, but you took in the book, and I found that interesting because this was something I didn't know very much about. There are certain, and it's interesting, like I said, I'm old, I'm old school. And, you know, back in the day, there was just a few things out there, and then there was eclectics, but nowadays, there's all types of new traditions and all these exciting new things. And you said, if I remember in the book, that there are dark pagan traditions that have emerged. Tell us a little bit about those. One, I find it interesting, and two, I want to dispel myths and rumors and the scary stuff about this. Does that make sense?
Oh, thank you. Does because again, you know, I'm old enough to remember the Satanic Panic of the 80s.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So,
and I got to tell you, I read the book, and it's actually really good.
Oh, I'm so honored.
I mean,
that's so sweet.
No, I mean, there's obviously there's a lot of things I disagree with. I think they take. You know, myself too far, but mm-hmm. it is not what I thought it was. It mm-hmm. was not. It's a different. It's just a philosophy. So absolutely. So nocturnal witchcraft. Tell us about that.
Nocturnal witchcraft was actually started by a dark pagan writer, Constantinos. And it's mm-hmm. a lot like Wicca, and when you read his material, it comes across very much good, standard Wiccan viewpoint. However, mm-hmm. you know, like they say, the devil's in the details. And mm-hmm. in this case, the emphasis is much more on just what it sounds like, working with nocturnal dark energy. So the tropes and, you know, E10s, they emphasize black. They emphasize working mm-hmm. with nighttime and moon magic mm-hmm. and night magic. Some of the deities tend to be darker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a dark deity is a matter of opinion, right?
Right.
One person's light deity, another person's dark.
Right.
But they work with nights, which is the night goddess, Anubis, just to mention a few. But in many ways, it's more of a very much more of a gothic Wicca.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nocturnal witchcraft, and you can learn more about it by the author Constantinos, who wrote a book by the same title, Nocturnal
mm-hmm.
Witchcraft. He also wrote another book, Gothic Grimoire, which expands on a lot, has a lot of practical rituals in it. I don't know how to say his next book, Nocturnicon,
mm-hmm.
which has a lot of other details in it. So that's nocturnal witchcraft.
Funny, you talk about Thelemic, which is OTO, and it's funny, I have a quick story. Aleister Crowley has, for a long time, just scared me. he has many practices that I don't agree with, and it was just like, you know, I thought he was evil, and so I did not even read anything about him. That's just a stereotype that I had in my head, and I think many people do. And then I went to a festival, went to a gather, and I attended a class of someone who was Thelemic, and he explained mm-hmm. things like, you know, the will and the self didn't mean selfish, it meant your true self and your true purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And then I participated in a Gnostic mass. It was beautiful. It totally,
mm-hmm.
totally, I realized that I had simply been prejudiced and scared. Do you know what I mean? Because,
uh-huh.
you know,
yeah.
Aleister Crowley, you look at the picture, he looks crazy. So it's interesting that I think your book does a really good job of opening people up to dark paganism, to the shadow side, which we need. And it teaches us that we may have stereotypes that need to be let go of. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah, it does. I mean, Crowley, as they say, would love the idea that you were scared of him.
Absolutely. I was like, oh.
You know, God, he ate that.
So,
He ate that up, that people were scared of him. You know, he loved it. He, you know, his mother, called him the beast. You know, you're the beast. That was his own mother said to him when he was a boy, as a child.
Yes.
And he said, yeah, I'll wear that.
Okay.
I'll own it. And and he was a character. You know, he had a massive appetite for magic and drugs and sex.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, but really, modern paganism, because Gardner drew
a lot of stuff
from him.
Yeah, right.
So
again, if you can get past the stereotypes and past him and look at his work, it looks different.
Yeah, I agree. And like you pointed out, Dilemma has survived
mm-hmm.
long after him. And they have it's quite active. And yes, I do call it a dark pagan path. It meets the sufficient criteria, in my opinion, to be considered dark pagan. I don't know if they wear the if they would wear the label, if they would even consider themselves quote unquote pagan. But I think it meets the definition when you really kind of look at the details of their view.
And I'm very interested because I've seen this and I know very little about it. The Order of the Vampire or Vampire Traditions. Touch a little bit, because I found that really interesting that that was included, because that's not something that I've noticed it maybe in the last 5 years, and typically in a gothic type manner. But to be honest, I didn't realize until recently that it was like a real thing.
Oh, yeah. It's very prominent, very busy. There's several different vampire orders and vampire traditions out there. There is one that is a branch of the Temple of Set called the Order of the Vampire. That might be the one you're thinking of. Also, there's a vampire path itself called the let me not draw a blank here. Not a good time.
Oh, that's fine.
You know what? Yeah, I think Order it's in your book. Grigori V.
Our listeners will, our listeners will just have to buy your book because it's in your book.
there you go. You buy the book. so anyway, essentially they look at the vampire as an archetype.
What?
As an archetype for transformation, not as an evil being. You know, the modern vampire, we've gone from Nosferatu and Dracula of the 1930s to Twilight. So, you know, the vampire has evolved over time. Like so much of what we do, we deconstruct
and it's become a romantic
something.
Figure. Absolutely.
Right, and we make a romantic figure. A lot of it had to do with the soap opera Dark Shadows. I remember watching that as a child. Was kind of the first real kickstart of changing the vampire. But it's now become an archetype, not just a victim, but an archetype for transformation. And those who I think really, what they look is that they draw in energy, which they convert in the hopes through ritual that they too can transform or transmute or ascend the self to higher states of being. So they do focus on the self. They work with multiple deities. So they are, in a sense, dark pagan.
Such
that the vampire
is
an archetype.
Right. So if I want to, and you do a really good job in the book with this too, if I want to develop a dark pagan lifestyle, first, people should buy your book so that they have a roadmap. But what are some things that you would be considered part of the dark pagan lifestyle? And it's so funny because when I first read it, because again, you know, you say meditation. That's almost in every spiritual path. And so there's nothing scary. It's very life-affirming. So tell us about the lifestyle.
Well, thank you. Well, you hit upon exactly that. Meditation is important because meditation, it does several things. One, it calms the distractions of the outside world. It also allows for self-knowledge, because as you meditate, you start to understand more about yourself. So meditation is a big part. Prayer. I mean, you know, that's, let's face it, the deities, whether it's gods, guardians, whatever deity you have a relationship with, because prayer is just relationship. Prayer is a form of conversation, relating, whether it's the cosmos, whether it's the earth.
With another type of being,
Sure. Start making offerings, keeping a journal. Journals are really good because you can look back and you can see growth, for example. You can also analyze today. Why did I do this? Why did I do that? Why did I snap at that person? That can be an important part of shadow work. And you and I haven't even talked about that.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of it. And, of course, books. Sure, yeah, please buy my book. But also there's a lot of great books out there. Join a group. You mentioned that I'm a member of Sebel, One Cup.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of communities have Covenant of United Universalist Pagans. I had to think about that for a moment there myself. Unitarian Universalist Pagans.
Absolutely.
And they're
all over the country. I was, until this year, the vice president of membership for the national organization. So they are everywhere. And so, yeah, it's a really good place for seekers and people who are interested in wanting community.
Sure. So, you know, that's just a few of the things you can do. I point out some other things. You know, Eliphas Levi, I mentioned that there are four maxims: to know, to dare, to will, to keep silent. And in this age of oversharing, social media partially is blamed on that. You know, where we take photographs of what we're going to have for dinner, right?
Right.
To keep silent is rebellious in and of itself. And it helps also build healthy boundaries for yourself, and that reinforces the self. Those are just a few of the things. I could go on and on. Those are just a few of the things that one can do, and I talk about this more in the book.
Absolutely. Like I said, I really, really enjoyed your book. Some things that I will compliment you on. You ended with two things I found interesting. You have a chapter that I think the listeners will really enjoy on famous magicians of history, which I really, really enjoyed. And you also give, which is interesting for authors to do, because many authors like to pretend that their book is the only one out there, you give a whole list of recommended readings, which I was really impressed with and thought that was really great.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm a firm believer in reading. I mean, my house is just, you know, a little library, just shelves bulging. I'm lost space for shelves. Now I got any free spot on the table has some books on it. And so, yes. So thank you. I appreciate that. And yes, I'm a firm believer in reading, reading, reading.
And you have a blog. Tell us about that.
My blog is titled Going Dark, and it's at darkfrater.blogspot.com. My most recent post was about Samhain. I did two different posts about Samhain most recently. I'm also on Facebook. Freighter Tenebus. I'm an administrator of a new website that we're just now getting off the ground called Shadow of the Black Rose, which both showcases dark pagan, dark magic, dark subculture creators. At the moment, I'm on Twitter. Whether I stay on Twitter is yet to be seen. but right now I'm also on Twitter.
It's funny, I am not a social media girl, and it's funny, I don't know how people have time to do all that stuff, but I have to say it's great because you can reach a lot of people really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Now do you have a TikTok? You need to have a TikTok.
No, I don't yet have a TikTok.
You need to have a TikTok. I teach actually at CUPS. I teach a class. And a girl in my class was talking about she had an Etsy shop, and she did a little bit of sales, and then she did a TikTok and went viral. And so I'm like,
really?
Freighter, you need a TikTok about dark paganism.
As long as I don't have to do a TikTok dance, I think I'll be okay.
So... this book was excellent. I mean, this is your first book. I'm very excited to see what you do next. Are you working on your second book? Or are you thinking about writing another book?
I am in the early stages of research on the second book. It's going to be a greater emphasis on the role of magic in self-cultivation where I'm right now going with that.
Well, I can't believe an hour's already passed, and you have been a fabulous guest. And so you have an open invitation to come back anytime, but especially when you have this new book.
I appreciate that. I've had a great time. This has been a blast.
So thank you so much. I know how busy you are taking time to chat. And folks, remember his new book, and it was just, when was it officially published?
This one, Philosophy of Dark Paganism, was just published beginning of October, October 8th.
Okay, good. Because I've been very bad about not necessarily knowing that, and I had somebody who was delayed, and so I'm like, okay, now I'm really, besides slaughtering authors' names, I'm trying to get much better. So it's out there, folks. It would be a fabulous, fabulous holiday present for someone. And it's called The Philosophy of Dark Paganism, Wisdom and Magic to Cultivate the Self by Fraser Tenebris. And thank you so much for coming on and sharing your book with us.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
And besides Fraser, I'd like to thank Laura and Stephen, my sound engineers, for their technical expertise. And finally, I'd like to thank all of you out there, our listeners, for your continued support of this show and all of our shows here on Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, or CSNP. Upcoming November 15th on Circle Talk, we'll be learning how to boost our psychic ability and incorporate the greater mysteries of magic into our practice. We'll be talking with author Matt Aaron about his new book, Mastering Magic, which is a companion book to his international bestseller, Psychic Magic. It's got over 60 spells from well-known practitioners, including Christopher Pinzak, Storm Fairy Wolf, Devin Hunter, and others. So join us on Circle Talk as we learn to cast magic to bridge the divide between the seen and unseen world to become psychic witches. So I look forward to being with you all again. Please come back. Good night, everyone. Be safe and blessed be.
When the king beneath the mountain see the star against the black, you really haven't any choice, and there's no turning back. Persephone, some say she led him on a chase through field and wood, some say he ran her to ground. But when beauty is your weapon and you burn like the sun, you draw the winter to you. There's just one way this tale can run. Persephone, run. Persephone, choose who you the dying rose above. Will you take this darkling heart into your own to love, Persephone? Some say she bleeds ice and white roses. Some say she flows crimson red. One season in the year to taste the flowers bloom, then And all the world would think that she's returning to her doom. But she earned her capital of a king. They know that it's not true. Persephone, run. Persephone, choose who you will be. Are you the beauty in the grave, or the dying rose above? Will you take his darkling heart into your own to love, Persephone? Some say her father did bargain. Some say her mother did grieve. She may have lost a life, but how she gained a crown to rule each dying breath, to lay each body down, to deliver every soul to the wheel that still goes round for Persephone. Run, Persephone, choose who you will be. Are you the beauty in the grave, or the dying rose above? Will you take this darkling heart into your own to love? Are you the beauty in the grave, or the dying rose above? Will you take his darkling heart into your arms to love, Persephone? Run.